Okay, test, test, test.
Testing. Dragon.
Perfect. All right. Oh, you know, Raymond's out. Wonderful 101 comes out next week or the week after.
I might float you a little money to get me the Luigi 2 now that you mentioned it.
Okay. Do you want the physical version versus the download? Or
I want the physical version, especially since it's a limited edition one.
I suppose.
Like, they're only doing one print of that.
Oh, so maybe I should pick it up.
The download will be available forever.
Sure.
But the physical version might turn out like the physical version of, you know, a couple other games that are pretty rare, so.
Sure. Right, right. Okay. I should just pick up a copy then, even if I never play it. I played some of Caleb's.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, right? It's like you start with 100 seconds left on the clock.
Yeah.
Like, all the time, and that's kind of fun. I didn't realize there was multiplayer built into it. In fact, because Mario's not in the game, they created a new character. Maybe we should save this for the show.
Yeah, let's save that for the show. Okay.
Oh, hey, Vink.
What's going on? There was like some music and some.
Oh,
what's going on?
Yeah, I picked up a new game for my 3DS.
Okay, the game has a theme song.
Oh yeah, you may have heard of it if you've ever watched Cartoon Network.
We don't get that here.
Oh, I suppose. I'm a big fan of Adventure Time, and I may.
I've been hearing that's the one with the dog, right?
Yeah. The dog that can turn into anything and can talk and whatever. Makes you wonder if he's really a dog or not.
When I came to America, I saw the DVDs and stuff for that everywhere. That's good.
I'm a big fan of it. It's a little strange, but it's strange in a way that, like, it appears like there's no reason for it to be strange, but there's a reason.
Oh, wait, I think we might have had this conversation.
Yeah.
You said that it's all an allegory for a post-apocalyptic something, something, something.
Yeah, I thought it might have been just, like, maybe, like, a hint, and it was kind of an in-joke, but, like, I talked to the guy at Target where I picked this up, and he's like, oh, no, that's for real, dude. That's like the Ice King, I guess, was a human, like, one of the last humans left before it got turned into the Ice King or whatever, and I'm like, oh. Okay.
I'm sorry, but it's just like, it's true. I confirmed it. A guy at Target.
Well, yeah, so right.
I played telling me to watch it last time, and I still haven't watched it, but so there's games too then.
Yeah, there's a second one that's either out or coming out. This one, I tried to get it at Best Buy because, you know, reward zone points and everything, but they claimed that they had no longer had it in stock. It was discontinued.
Oh. And which, the first one?
Yeah, but that's not really true because I picked it up for Target at like for $5 less than Best Buy had it listed, so whatever. I could have also.
What system is it on?
3DS.
Ah, 3DS, okay.
It's by WayForward, the same guys who just.
Oh my gosh, WayForward's awesome.
Right? Yeah, they just released the DuckTales Remastered game.
Oh yeah, that was them too, yeah. I'm thinking way forward because I really liked what they did with Contra 4.
Oh, right.
Did you play that?
Nope.
And they're the Shantae guys, right? Am I pronouncing that right? Shantae?
I don't know. Is it Shantae? Shantae? I have no idea how I would pronounce
Viewers,
that.
Viewers, please tell us how to pronounce this.
Yeah, there's a Kickstarter out there right now, isn't there? Is that what I'm thinking?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I've been so bad. I've done like 6 Kickstarters this month.
Wow.
Well, like I did for what was the one, the Metroidvania like Dark Souls thing? What was that called? Ghost Song.
Ghost Song. Yep, that closed recently. They didn't hit their Wii U goal, but they're going
to
try.
Making it, they're gaffers, and they're saying that they're going to try to make it anyway. for Wii U. And what else did I pledge for? Mighty Number 9.
Oh, yes. I still have to do that. I have time, though.
I had my pledge at the, you know, the $15 level or whatever, the get a copy of the game level. Right. But then, like, I saw this other reward, and it was like, they'll make a physical box.
Whoa.
And retro manual.
No.
Now, they're not going to make cartridges. Although there is thought that they might do like a USB stick in there.
Okay.
But you have your choice of having an NES themed box, you know, same size and dimensions, or a Famicom sized box.
Oh no.
So I might actually have to pledge a little higher to get both.
How much is that level?
It's a $60 tier.
Okay, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, they're as of this recording, they're 22 days to go.
Yep.
And they have twice what they're asking for, so they're at 1.8 million. And in order to get like PS3, Xbox Live Arcade, and Wii U versions, they want 2.2 million.
They'll get there like in a couple of days.
Yeah.
By the time you hear this podcast, they'll be there. Yeah.
So I've been commenting to people that if it's not up already, I think an article on Four Color Rebellion where probably the games Rebels play. I don't know, maybe not. But I've been saying to people that I don't really find these games very interesting unless there's a Wii U tier.
And I agree. Number 9
didn't have one at first. So I was like, maybe I'll just buy it when it comes out. But now they've added it, and now I want to spend money on it.
Well, it was there since the beginning, but it was just such a high tier that like a lot of people didn't know if it was going to make it or not.
Gotcha.
It's the same, but like I pledge for Shantae because from the beginning, if it gets funded at all, there's Wii U. It's not a separate tier or anything
okay,
like that.
Got it.
That one's almost there already.
Right.
And that just started a couple days ago, so.
Right on.
I've been doing some independent movie projects too and stuff like that. It's like when you get on Kickstarter, you're like, okay, I pledged. But it doesn't feel real because it doesn't actually, you know, it doesn't charge your card till it actually, like, finishes.
Right.
So you
and Ghost Song just finished, too. I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot that I didn't actually pay for this yet.
Yeah. So, yeah, Kickstarter bills come in at random times on my credit card statements. I'm like, oh, yeah, I did fund that. I'm loving Kickstarter. And I know that a lot of people hate Kickstarter because, you know, there's no guarantee. But, like, when you go for when the project is being run by, like, the original Mega Man team.
Oh, I know, right?
Way Forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or Famicom Dojo. You know, you can trust them.
Hint, hint. I know, that's terrible tease. What I really need to do is put up something on our website where you can sign up to get notified once the Kickstarter does go live.
Yeah, because I mean, we want to get that up. We want to get that up as soon as possible. But we're gonna for reasons we have to wait a little bit.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So yep. You were right, by the way, Shantae, whatever. Way Forward. So they are halfway to their goal of 400,000, and they have 25 days to go as of this recording. So they'll probably make it. I mean, it's Way Forward.
Now, speaking, I mean, and it's weird because like I'm really into this whole like Kickstarter, like, and these are all going to be eShop titles. I don't know why, but I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, me either. I mean, it's the easiest method of distribution. You don't have to spend money to print anything, and if you're an independent developer, like Nintendo's been making it easier and easier,
yep,
to get development kits.
You heard what Nintendo did, right?
Oh,
for the indie development scene.
Sure. Well, so what I know for sure so far is that they're including a copy of Unity with all their dev kits.
Yeah, and their dev kits the dev kit itself is cheaper than getting a developer copy of Unity.
Yeah. Yep.
Crazy because okay, Unity. I mean, you're a dev.
Yeah.
I mean, right?
Yeah.
Sort. I mean, you're not really doing games right now,
no.
Or at least not publicly.
Yet.
but with Unity's licensing, you know, you pay for the basic Unity license, which is not that expensive. But then you pay extra for each console you're doing.
Yeah.
It's like,
and the professional license is like above and beyond like a regular license as well.
But not only that, but when you release a title. Just any title, you have to pay Unity like a $10,000 licensing before royalties.
Wow.
Like up front.
That's insane.
But Nintendo is going to eat that cost.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Anybody releasing something on the Wii U, that's crazy for indies. I mean, that's amazing.
And this is really good for me because like the eShop is where I feel like the Wii U really shines, and that's where I've been spending most of my money on it. I know that there's some games coming out in America you're wanting to pick up for you, and like new Super Luigi U is one of them. But I don't know if I really want it that badly, even though it's only $30. But I'm totally snapping up $10-$15 games like no one's business right now on the eShop.
Did you get you got DuckTales Remastered?
Not yet.
I haven't picked it up yet, but I think I might tonight. I don't know. I know WayForward's a great company, but I'm a little worried about those remastered games because sometimes I feel like a lot of the charm in the original gets lost.
Okay, I think you're pretty much right, at least in the case of DuckTales. Although what they have done with it, from what I've been hearing from people, makes it worth it. They brought together as much of the original voice cast from the cartoon that's still alive, and they're all reprising their roles. And they're adding these cutscenes and stuff to just kind of flesh it out more into the DuckTales universe, which I don't think is necessary because it was such a good game by itself. But that just adds, they really care, you know? They didn't have to do that.
DuckTales is one of my favorite games from childhood. I never owned a copy, but because I never actually really saw it for sale anywhere, which is weird. But this is back in Hodunk, Wisconsin, you know. So,
right.
If there were only a couple of shops that sold games, and each of them only had a couple dozen, you know.
Right.
But the video rental store, which was also a supermarket in my town, had it, and we must have rented it 10 times. I mean, I think we might have beat it at the end. I don't know. But the thing is, what I realize now is it was done by Capcom and probably by a team that wasn't super familiar with the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the characters were in, but some of the settings were kind of odd. And, I remember in DuckTales how Scrooge McDuck constantly does cane jumps on things.
Yes.
But it didn't matter because it was just such a solid game. It just really, really was great. And I'm just a little worried about them remaking history. But I'm going to buy it anyway because I love DuckTales.
Yeah.
And because when I'm watching the trailer, I'm like, I don't really recognize this game as DuckTales NES.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not.
Even if it wasn't a remake, I'd buy it because it's a brand new DuckTales game made by Capcom.
Yeah.
And,
they also did something really cool for press, and unfortunately we didn't make the cut. But they had, 150 gold cartridges made of the original game.
That's awesome.
That's just so cool. So it's an actual NES, the actual NES game on an NES cartridge that they, painted gold and gave a new label to and everything. So it's not remastered, but it's still, that's amazing.
You should remaster Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers. That one was great, too.
Oh, God. Well, that's why I didn't really play it so much.
It was great because it was co-op. I think it was the first game. Yeah, Chip and Dale could play at the same time, and you could, jump on one another to reach higher places and stuff like that.
Huh.
I played that so much. I've never been able to beat it single player. It's kind of hard that way, but when you're doing co-op, if one person dies, the other one can go a little farther.
Sure.
If you die single player, you got to, restart the level,
Yeah, that's hardly like a foreign concept now because Donkey Kong Country Returns has been using that ever since the Wii version came out.
Oh, yeah.
And it goes back even farther than that to the original Donkey Kong Country as well. But
yeah. But man, the Capcom Disney licensed games were so good. It's strange to even use this term now. The licensed games were so good.
Yeah, that doesn't really happen that often.
It continued into Super Nintendo because some of the Mickey Mouse games on Genesis and Super Nintendo were fantastic as well. Castle of Illusion was wonderful. But then, I don't know, around PlayStation N64, licensed game just meant quick sell it to the kids before the reviews come out.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
I don't know. I don't know, because there's no reason for it that I'm aware of.
That's another topic altogether.
I guess. Did you pledge for Shovel Knight?
It was on my reminders, and I don't know. I was really busy with work. I was planning to do the one of the physical tiers, actually.
All right, on. I don't remember what I had paid for. I think I might have gotten the digital one.
But like, and it ended, but I've been following it since, and I'm totally in for it as soon as it comes out.
It's just an interesting story to me, right? Because I knew of Way Forward at the time, and yeah. I did not know they were making DuckTales Remastered, because it was like, I think PAX East happened right after I first heard about the Shovel Knight Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And so I was like, wow, that's really great that we, you know, get the actual DuckTales and a DuckTales inspired. Well, you know, there's lots of inspirations that go into Shovel Knight, but the whole like bouncing on the cane thing, bouncing on the shovel thing.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing was, is that these guys were all ex Way Forward employees, making me wonder why they left, you know? And it's one of those things where it's like, it kind of sullied the reputation of Way Forward in my eyes, even though I've never played one of their games before. Cause I was just like, well, if these guys left this company, then maybe it's not so cool, you know?
Well, I don't know, but, like, they seem to be on good terms with each other still, though. Okay.
All right. Well, that's good.
I don't know. Maybe I think it's just, like, Way Forward, other than, like, it's Shantae,
they don't have any original properties.
The Half-Genie property is their only, like, really original property. Most of it is them making licensed things. Right. Or, you know, being you know, remaking old franchises or, you know. So they don't really have a lot of chances to make, like, original things. Right. So I think it's the same with Mighty No. 9, you know. Kenji, what is it, Ifune? Why don't I write these down? Anyway, you know, he left Capcom because he said that like he was unable to, you know, make original creative whatever. Although he did, the first game he does since he leaves is a Mega Man clone.
Well, that's the thing though, right? Like, because we
Legends
were part
was
of,
canceled.
Yeah, Legends was canceled. So, yeah.
But the thing is, like, you know, sometimes if people feel that they can't get the licenses they want or the corporate structure doesn't allow them to make the games they want, they'll leave. Like, right. I don't think Capcom is a bad company. I don't feel less on Capcom because the Mega Man team left, because Capcom still makes fantastic games.
Do they? But,
yeah.
What's the last Capcom game you played?
Two.
I gotta pause just a second. Little boy's having a hard time here.
Okay. Well, I mean, the Phoenix Wright series,
Number
5 is coming out, although it is download only.
Right.
Which bugs me a little bit, because it makes me very worried to ever lose or break a DS, you know? Because, come on, Nintendo, unified account system, you know, let us re-download things that we bought. You know, the other consoles figured it out. Come on.
So since last episode, I, you know, made a point of going into the Famicom Dojo account on my Wii U. And
yep.
Sorry about that, by the way. I didn't realize that would tie it to my system forever and ever. I thought for sure by the time you got yours, you'd be able to log into it as well. But
well, maybe in the future.
But, yeah, one can hope, right? But one of the things that I found out was that you can attach multiple Club Nintendo accounts. Because each login can, you know, be attached to one. And, like, you know, I have my Club Nintendo account on my 3DS now. So, like, you know, I have two systems. Actually, three if you count my Wii. Three systems all attached to the same account. So Nintendo knows everything that I own.
Yeah.
Across multiple devices. And
no, just whether they're going to... And if you ever do lose your system, you know, they can put them back. But it's at their discretion.
Right, which is silly. Nonsense.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know. So,
you know, they say they haven't quote-unquote figured it out yet, but I'm not really sure what that really means.
I think what they figured out is that if you can't take your content with you, it makes people a lot more reluctant to sell a system.
I suppose.
But that's just the pessimist in me. But anyway, no, Capcom does good stuff. It's just that they don't do the stuff that I used to love from Capcom.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, they don't do Resident Evil the way I liked Resident Evil. They've done it as a pew-pew shooter, you know?
You mean without the racism?
No, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Is like, I liked it better when it was more racist. No. I mean, I liked it when it was survival horror, right. You know? And it's not so much anymore. Like, Zombie U is survival horror.
Oh, heck yeah, it's wonderful.
But like Resident Evil 5 and 6 were more like, I don't know, they were like action shooter. And that's fine. If you like action shooters, maybe a lot of the people who were turned off by the whole survival horror thing love that, you know?
Right.
And then Capcom really stopped doing platformers, by shooter, I mean like a space shooter, not like third person.
Right, right.
They used to do those really, really well. You know, so I mean, they stopped making a lot of the games that I liked for them in the retro, you know, era.
Right.
But what's amazing is like the people from it are still going at it, and they, for a long time, would just be struggling like PC people. But due to the power of Kickstarter, they have the opportunity to make console games again. It's crazy.
I mean, like, you know, I bought a new Al Lowe game, for crying out loud. That's just ridiculous.
And he has been retired since I was old enough to admit playing the games.
Right. Good times.
But yeah, it's a crazy time for games, and I know some of the Kickstarter projects fail, and some of them take way longer, but
looking at you, Double Fine.
But it's gonna get done.
Right. I'm not worried about that part.
And for me, I don't care exactly when it gets done. I know some people have been chomping at the bit for it, but I got a million other games to play.
Yeah, I'm not worried.
But like, when it comes out, I'll be like, oh, it came out, and I'll download it, and it'll sit on my computer until I've got time to do it, so... Right. I'm not so worried about that. So, for those who have been burnt by a Kickstarter, though, sorry.
Right.
And I know some of them have, but I think what really matters is to look at the reputation of the people making it, and to also take a look at whether the goals are realistic.
Yes.
So many of them are like, I need $2,000 to make this 60-hour RPG. You're not going to get it.
Yep.
Not going to happen. You know, the team is me and my friends from high school. You're not going to get it.
Mm.
I funded a movie once made by high school students because I thought it was the nice thing to do. You know, I'm like, wow, what ambitious kids. That's awesome. They're trying to make a post-apocalyptic movie on $700. But, you know, you fund where your heart is, though. Like, I'm like, huh. Digital copy of the movie for $2. For $3, you get, I don't know, something else. So that's, I think I pledged $5. And when that obviously fell apart and didn't happen, you know, it's $5. It's not, not worth going into. So basically what I'm saying is fund stuff that do some research and fund things that are either done by notable people, ones that have realistic goals, or supporting people who you get a free podcast from all the time.
Not necessarily for doing the podcast itself, mind you, but for the other things that, yeah. So you know, we definitely want to do ours right, make sure our goals are realistic, and that we launch at a time that we're actually able to get it done. So I think, like I mentioned last week, we're going to work on the main goal regardless, you know, in the coming months while it's not active, because we want to release something in some form anyway. That's not going to stop us. But we're hoping that, you know, like by doing the actual Kickstarter itself, that we will be able to have more stuff in it if it is successful.
Yeah. I kind of wish we hadn't mentioned it in the Madison Underground video, though.
Oh, yeah. Video. Yeah, so we had our 6-year anniversary. We mentioned it there.
Yep.
We said that we might in our Madison Underground promo that we might have something to show at that point, and we didn't.
No. Well, we didn't have much to show at all at the Madison Underground event.
Yeah, we had some technical issues, and we didn't get so we didn't show everything we wanted to do. But, you know, the major points in our docket were still. Handled.
Let's talk about the Madison Underground.
Sure.
Should I talk a little bit about America as well?
Sure. So yeah, let's go back then to how this whole thing started in the first place. I was contacted by Justin Schober, the guy who organizes it, about January of this year. So that's 2013 for those listening in the future. And I didn't know what to make of it at first because I hadn't been to the Madison Underground before, and it's like, oh, I should come to a show and see what it's like. So basically, what it is they have a showcase at the Broom Street Theater, which is a local Madison alternative theater, very small on historic Willie Street, despite the name. So I think it was on Broom Street at one point, but it since moved. So it's not a really big venue, like about 60 people, I think, is normal seating. And I did eventually get to go in about, May was the first time I went. And I got to see some really interesting stuff. And I actually felt like we were not a good fit because these are people like, you know, making full length theatrical films, you know, very cinematic type stuff, not like a short 8 to 15 minute podcast or video, I should say, an hour long podcasts. So I was like, all right, well, let me think about it. He let me know the date ahead of time, which was late August. I was like, well, that's far enough in the future to make plans. So, you know, I just kind of let that simmer for a while. And then you told me you were coming to America.
Yep.
And I didn't put the two things together right away because it was like, you know, sometime in the summer. I'm like, oh, okay. And when I eventually decided that I was going to do it regardless of what happened, you know, I was like, all right. And then I talked to you about it again, and I was like, hey, when are you actually going to be in America? Because I have these dates set aside, and it just happened to coincide with your vacation.
It was at the tail end of it, too. Like, yes. The day before I was to fly back. And, oh, man, there was a lot. Wow, there was a lot of logistical stuff. Because I don't live anywhere near Madison.
Right.
So I had to arrange it, but then I'm like, huh, Madison, that's near the House on the Rock. Maybe I can convince the family to go if I have that as the carrot, you know?
That seemed to work out pretty well. We almost didn't go to the House on the Rock.
Yeah, my daughter's. Well, if you know what the House on the Rock is, you know what, if you don't know what the House on the Rock is, read American Gods by Neil Gaiman, because you should read that anyway. But really what it is it's that's a hard question. I'm going to link to a video about the House on the Rock, I think. So people can see it, because it's kind of indescribable.
The short version is there was this guy there was like this picnic rock people would eat at, and he decided he was going to build a house there, because wouldn't that be cool, and sort of built it on the land despite not having the permission, and sort of got it later.
Yeah, a number of years later. But, yeah, he built a Japanese-style house on the top of this giant shelf of rock, and which is already kind of ludicrous. And then people were like, whoa, that's awesome. I want to go in there. And he's like, hey, I'm building this right now. Leave me alone.
Right.
Like, no, we really want to see inside. And he's like, yeah, fine. But after a while, he's like, yeah, you can come in. Just it's going to be 50 cents.
Right.
It's going to be sense to go in, and what happened was then people were like, instead of deterring them from coming in, which was according to legend what he was trying to do, it made people tell their friends about it, and it started to just become this tour. So he never actually got the chance to really live in it, because it kind of became a tourist attraction.
Mm.
Still building it, and for like 40 years, he just never stopped building it.
Yeah, there's a lot there, a lot to see. There's the house itself, of course, but like you spend most of your time at these, you know, deliberately created tourist attractions, like really, really crazy stuff.
Of the complex of the House on the Rock, the actual house is only like 5%.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
They built basically these gigantic warehouses where he just has collections of collections, and the world's largest carousel, and I don't know, it's weird. Research about it. If you're ever in Wisconsin, it's worth seeing. It's like the tourist trap mecca.
Yeah, but it's unfortunately not terribly close to Wisconsin Dells, which is like the Vegas of Wisconsin, if I can even call it that.
I compare it to a town in Japan called Beppu. It's very, very similar to that. They're basically a hot spring resort town, and they've got, you know, lots of themed restaurants and stuff. And yeah. Anyway,
we recorded some stuff there, so
yeah,
we want to release some video. Although, you know, it's just interesting. Let's say so. I can't really promise when or where or how that'll come out, but we got some stuff that we filmed together that we would like to share with you all at some point.
Probably be on the next Famicom Dojo Fest.
Right.
But anyway, the America trip was wonderful. It's my first time back in America in 3 years. And it's I know a lot of people are like, why would you ever come back? You live in Japan. Japan is the greatest country in the... Yeah. I love America. I'm very proud to be an American, too. I like it a lot. I mean, Japan... live now, but that doesn't make me... I mean, I get homesick too.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff, and for you guys, all the time I'm getting like these things. I envy you so much that you're there, but you just can't get a really good cheeseburger.
Right. I mean, it's a nice place to visit, and I lived there as a college student for 4 months, but that wasn't real life, you know. If you had to be an adult and you know, work a job and then get married and have a family, you have a very different outlook on what it's like to be there day in and day out.
And I mean, there's amazing things in Japan, and the retro scene here is fantastic, much, much better than, you know, what you're going to find pretty much anywhere in America. But, you know, there's some things Japan does really well, and there's some things that America does better. And coming to Wisconsin, it's the cheese. Japan just figured out the technology to make good cheese yet.
Oh, I know. When I was there, I lost all kinds of weight by like, you know, running and walking everywhere and not eating a lot of fatty foods. And the first thing I did when I got back to America was I had cheese curds at a restaurant, and then I gained like 30 pounds. So not just from that one incident, but you know,
I had one cheese curds and gained 30 pounds.
It might have been the good Wisconsin beer too.
Oh, yes, that'll do it as well. It's not even that it's so much good that Wisconsin is good, but it's cheap.
Yes.
But anyway, it was great. It was great to be back. It was my first time for my youngest daughter to see America, and the first time that my oldest daughter will remember.
Right. Yeah. Because she was with you guys 3 years ago, just shy of her first birthday, and I remember that quite well, because we met at one wonderful Wisconsin staple, which also has a lot to do with beer, the Great Dane.
It was a good trip, and I bought far beer games.
Oh, I don't know how many is too many.
7. Okay, I know. You're thinking like of the pictures I post like on a nearly daily basis on Facebook, saying, "Look, I got 30 games today." But you know, these are like newer games. Like this is Wii U stuff,
right?
You know, it's not tiny amounts of money. It's, you know, I think I spent about $700 on my Wii U and all the software I got for it.
Well, you know, you're catching up to the last, you know, maybe year or so.
But I got a couple PlayStation 3 games that I've been meaning to play, and interesting thing, that I have a PlayStation Portable again.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and I did. I guess thank yous are in order.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, okay, so, well, maybe we should bring that in when we actually start the event. No, oh. it happened at the Madison Underground event.
Sure.
Which is a good place for anything to happen. It was slightly before we started. I was getting there about 3 minutes before we were to start. Right. Maybe we're telling the story in the wrong order.
I think we are. So there was House on the Rock, right? Actually, before that, there was GeekCon, which also coincidentally was the same weekend, which is Madison's local, you know, geek-centric convention that, you know, I've been involved in helping organize at various points. But this year, I was just there on Friday night for a Child's Play fundraiser, which got $700, and the idea was to play Lost Levels on the All-Stars version all the way through 8-4. With no wall running, no warping, and then you pass the controller every time you died or beat a level. And I feel pretty good because I hadn't actually played the game before beyond the first world, and even though I've owned it for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
It was really fun to go through it with people and just have this kind of camaraderie and reinforcements, because, you know, whenever you beat something, you felt really good because everyone started cheering. But I also had my 3DS, so I was running around the convention getting street passes and whatnot. But that was the extent of our involvement in GeekCon. Lots and lots of people who were running the convention were upset that they wouldn't be able to attend Madison Underground because it was the Sunday night when they were taking everything down and packing stuff up from the hotel.
So, yeah, do we want to talk about our filming?
So yeah, after... we spent some time around Madison that Sunday, and like right before the event, we had like an hour, I think, to film some stuff. So we didn't have anything really concrete written down, and just kind of brainstormed stuff as it came up. Because we did stuff at House on the Rock too, but like this is for, you know, stuff we're going to use in an actual episode at some point, hopefully. And let's just say if you've been watching season 2, it's going to call back to that heavily. But as a result, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was saying, I think some of the footage has Sean without any pants on.
No, I think that was you. It was one of us. Yeah, what a tease, right? Okay, so, but that took us like until right before the event started. And I still had to go and pick up pizza for that Glass Nickel, another local Madison establishment, was donating. For the audience.
No, we wouldn't have been that late if we hadn't run into the guy.
Oh, right. That's the story you regaled them with as I was picking up the pizza, wasn't it?
Yep. It was the first story I told while I was there. And I got, I don't know, mixed reactions from it.
But yeah, so we were at this park where we filmed a lot of stuff before for season 2, and this guy saw us doing our mock fighting, and he was just like, "That is the most ridiculous thing I have ever seen."
Wearing your karate gi, right?
Yeah, I was wearing my karate gi.
Like, what belt are you, or something?
Yeah, it was a white belt, obviously.
And he watched us film this terrible, like, play fighting with Wii controllers and stuff.
Yeah.
This was pretty embarrassing, having this gigantic, heavily tattooed man watching.
He wasn't that big. I was taller than him, but he was frightening, and he didn't smell that great.
He was muscular.
Yeah.
Maybe he wasn't that tall, but he seemed tall to me.
Yes.
Because he just was a very intimidating-looking guy. Well, late 40s, maybe?
Yeah, sounds about right. He was the Marine, I think?
Yeah, you could tell by his tattoos and the skull on his arms and stuff. My dad was a Marine, too, but he comes off like, I don't know, he gives the Pillsbury Doughboy vibe. So.
Does your dad listen to this podcast?
I love my dad. I've used him in a video.
True, true.
But two videos. But anyway, this guy's watching us, and at the end he's like, "Oh, what did he say?" He's like, what I just saw was terrible, or
it was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
And then he says words that I really should have written down, because I hope I'm getting this right. He's like, "But would you know how to get out of a headlock?"
Yeah, so it was something like that. And, you know, he comes up to me, and I'm like, actually, we kind of got to go. I was like, no, so just take a second. So I was like, come on, try to put me in a headlock. And I'm like, okay. So I'm holding, like, the camera, and I put my arm around over his shoulder, and he just, like, grabs my wrist and twists it behind my back. And I'm like, ow, that hurts. Okay.
Very polite about it. You're like, do you want me to come in from the left side or the right?
You're right.
And I'm holding the camera right now.
Oh, you're holding the camera. I had something. Oh, I had the bags. That's what I had.
And I was thinking, like, should I film this? This is pretty funny. And, of course, just by thinking that, karma will catch up to me.
Right.
Because after that, he's like, you know, the secret of taking down your... Oh, wait, he's like, the real secret to fighting is you shouldn't have to fight or whatever, but if you do, you know, sometimes you just got to take down your opponent. And I'm like, oh, dear. And he's like, the best thing you can do is to be extra friendly.
Uh-huh. At this point, like, alarm bells are going off in our heads. It's like, okay, what's going to happen next?
To me, and he's like, hello, shake hands. And I'm like, I'm going to get hurt now. Yeah. And I think trying to make excuses like, you know, we really got to go. There's pizza. We got an event coming up. And we're Famicom Dojo. We're going to talk about retro games. Would you like to go? You know,
right.
You know, but he holds out his hand and I shake it. And yeah, about 2 seconds later, I've got him pressing his arm against my Adam's apple.
Yeah, which was not necessary.
And I'm like, is this guy ever going to leave, or is he going to kill us right now?
Right.
Like, I didn't think we'd probably killed. It was a pretty public area, but, like, I don't know if he'd mean to kill us, but we're pretty weak guys. So, you know, he'd accidentally kill us.
Right. Yeah, and he'd probably feel bad about it if he did.
That'd be manslaughter for him, but it would mean a lot of people would go without pizza.
Yes.
So anyway, I think he wanted to talk substantially more, but we kind of backed slowly away.
Yeah.
And kind of ran to the car. And I've already forgotten so much of the things that were said during that. I really wish I would have taped what we filmed at Madison Underground, because we started the Madison Underground event like 20 minutes after this happened.
Yeah, we had some of it on camera, but, like, you know, due to the technical difficulties and, you know, the fact that I was off dealing with those rather than, like, recording or, like, even doing some of the hosting early on, I don't feel like it's really worth sharing.
No, not. We got there. I was going about alone for a while, and then Sean came back with the pizza. And we did our little introduction, and we showed some of the early season one videos. And we were having problems because the computer that they had hooked up to it was pretty old.
Yeah, it was a Mac, but I had remastered a lot of our stuff in 720p, and didn't do a test run on the computer beforehand to make sure it would work okay. And it was all right for the first few minutes, but after a while, it just did not keep up.
Oh.
And we didn't really have a choice but to go to our DVD and YouTube to get everything done, which is too bad, because we had some stuff that was kind of like little bits of other episodes kind of tied together to help kind of tell a story. So, like, the intent was that we wanted to go through the multiple Sean's thing, yep. And we wanted to do a lot of the family tree stuff, which I think at least that much got.
We did that.
But yeah, we're gonna show some more non-Famicom Dojo stuff, like the video made when I turned 30 and the whole Logan's Run reference, because it was in our 30th anniversary episode, actually. So you know, to kind of explain like where that reference came from, but ultimately, sadly, you know, we weren't able to pull that all together. But you know, I think we'll do an event like this again at some point in the future. Although Vink might not be able to go, but I'll know what the capabilities of the Madison Underground are at least ahead of time.
And then we had our gigantic cluster street pass.
Yes, at the end, we all exchanged friend codes and got a lot of street passes.
Oh yeah, and that was a lot of fun. It was fun to meet people who watched the show. That was really great. And here's where we come back. This guy named Ryan came and he gave me a PSP. He had
an extra. Nice. Wow.
Super awesome. And I wasn't even sure what to say. I think I just mumbled something like, "What? Wow, really? Huh? Yeah, really nice guy." We didn't really get to talk. I was gonna thank him at the end, give him some, like, I don't know, some I don't know, dojo merch or something like at the end. But he took off before we were done cleaning up, so I didn't actually get to say goodbye. So Ryan, if you're listening to this, I should give you some stuff. Please like get hold of me. And that was super cool what you did. I can play Valkyria Chronicles 2 now, which I've had sitting in my shelf without a PSP for, I don't know, about 2 years now.
Wow.
So I'm happy about that.
Yeah, also, we exchange a lot of stuff between us, and you know, a lot of things for the show that I haven't even got a chance to look at for my own self, regardless of, you know, getting anything recorded. And I really can't wait to delve into it. We got some really, really neat things to show you guys.
But what I brought Sean about 50 pounds of game stuff.
Does not include the Pepsi flavored Cheetos.
Oh, maybe that includes the Pepsi flavored Cheetos. But like, the suitcase was packed to the weight limit. And all that was in there, like, other than game stuff for Sean, was like a couple pairs of socks. So
yeah, so that Madison Underground video that you saw was not a joke. That was the actual stuff he was bringing. So that's a hint right there.
Yep. But there's some amazingly great stuff in there, and it's going to make some great episodes coming up. I'm sad without actually some of that stuff.
Well, you know, you'll get some of it back eventually.
Yeah, but the truth of the matter is Sean has a better setup for recording stuff. I mean, most of the stuff that I do is just like in the tatami bedroom with the bad lighting and the bad camera. So it makes more sense for hardware stuff to be on Sean's end. But it was a neat thing to have in my collection.
Right on. Yeah, I can't wait to get some time to just like dig into it, use it, and then record it. But you know, we also have stuff that we're trying to plan for the rest of this year regarding the Famicom 30th anniversary. And we're always working on the scripts for that. In fact, we wrote one really soon after Minus Worlds came out, and I'm really happy with it. It's going to be interesting.
So, we've got lots of fun stuff coming up. The Madison Underground event. Thank you to everyone who's listening who attended. It was great. I know a lot were going to attend but had to cancel suddenly at last minute or something came up. That's unfortunate. But thank you for at least considering coming. And we've got lots and lots of great stuff coming up. The trip to Wisconsin was good. I was able to find gaming has become in the 3 years I've been gone. Sean, I don't like it.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I like it. I went to the stores and every game looks kind of the same.
It's kind of true. I mean, I frequent the retro shops around Madison. There's like three of them, essentially. And so I kind of go there for refuge. But yeah, I don't really buy a lot of new games.
But I went to GameStop.
Well, that was your first mistake.
I don't have a lot of choices, you know?
Right.
It was either GameStop or Best Buy, and I don't know. I probably should have gone for Best Buy, but, you know, I just wanted to get this stuff so I could find out how much weight it was going to take up in my suitcase.
Right.
The Wii was the same price anywhere you went, you know. The games I picked up at lots of different places, but the Wii U itself, I got at GameStop, and you know, I was buying it there, and the guy was like, "Are you sure you want this?" Well, yeah. And he's like, "You do know that there's like the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 are coming." And I'm like, "Yeah, but still want that." And he's like, "Why?" And I'm like, "Wow, I wonder why the sales of this are bad." You know, and I'm like, "Well, it kind of it. You know, there's games on it that I want to play, whatever." And he's like, "This system's mostly for kids."
Oh my god, I just, so much rage. Okay, there is one problem with the Wii U that I have been noticing. So I have Injustice, which I've been complaining about a lot, not being really well supported by WB Games. And then I picked up Assassin's Creed 3 because it was cheap and on sale, and you were wondering if you were going to buy it, and then I bought it for myself instead. I cannot connect to an online match in that. I've had a total of one other person show up in the matchmaking, and you need at least four to start a match. It just doesn't happen. So, and then now the news that Arkham Origins isn't going to have multiplayer at all in the Wii U came out. Because there's just no community there, and it's just a fact. Unfortunately, you do not if your game depends on multiplayer to any extent, do not buy it for the Wii U if you can help it.
But in my mind, Assassin's Creed isn't a multiplayer game.
I bought Brotherhood as my first one, and I missed the Xbox Gold thing.
Okay.
Back in July to get Assassin's Creed 2, but yeah, there's a single player game which I haven't really played because I've mostly bought it for the multiplayer. It's this really interesting kind of, you know, you're supposed to like be stealthy and not like outrageous, and you get more points that way. And the people don't understand that mechanic, and they kind of really ruin the experience. But it's a more subtle way to do multiplayer, and I love it.
It's a multiplayer mode, but I thought most people buy the single player story driven.
Yeah, so I can still play it that way. I don't think I wasted my money, but I'm not going to play a multiplayer match in that. I've come to terms with it.
Well, the problem is self-fulfilling prophecy, though. There's no online community, so Arkham comes out with no online multiplayer, so there's no online... I mean, you know.
Right.
At some point, you got to build it, you know.
Yeah, whose job is that? The third parties or Nintendo? That's a whole other podcast.
whole other podcast. But, yeah, because if no one buys... games, no one plays the third-party games, so there's no online community, and Nintendo can't make an online community for a third-party game.
Right.
Ugh, yeah, it's complicated.
And third parties can't make the system sell, especially if the game is released on other systems. Thanks, Rayman.
What they should do, and I still don't know why companies don't do this, is... Why does every company put their multiplayer, especially if the games are spec equivalent? Why does everyone lock multiplayer to a given system? I don't understand.
Because
that.
They get paid to do it.
I guess, but if you had multiplayer where a Wii user could play against a 360 user, I mean, it can't be impossible to do. Some games do it.
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure that Microsoft has a lock on the. And their online stuff,
you know,
Sony has the Steam compatibility with PS3 and probably PS4 as well.
Yeah. I guess it's not a question of the technology doesn't allow it, but it's not in Microsoft or Sony's best interest to allow.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I guess that makes sense. Anyway, I'm getting it. I told you about the Pikmin disc that was open already. And
yeah, yep, until that last episode.
But so I bought it, and I'm feeling kind of about it, you know, because it just like it was such an ordeal to buy the Wii U that like the whole time he's like, please don't buy this. Please reconsider. Buy this hardcore platform. Come on. You're an adult, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's not that Nintendo has to fix right there.
Because
can't get fixed, they're never going to get any traction. If the only people who can buy a Wii U are the ones who really, really, you know, need to have it and are willing to put Wade through the crap, you know?
Right.
Like, there weren't even any out. I had to add them. Like, yeah, we got some of the back. There were no consoles on the floor. You know, there was nothing, you know. The games were, like, put in, like, the ghetto corner. It was sad. But the sadder thing that I found was when I looked at the selections for, like, the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 and the pre-order stuff for the other systems, I think gaming has kind of moved past me.
Don't say that.
No, like, the type of gaming I like to do doesn't exist much anymore. And the type of gaming that's really popular is stuff that I don't really like.
Oh, dear.
Like, all war shooters and space shooters and stuff like that.
There's other games out there. Like you said, you know, the eShop is this wonderful ecosystem full of the games that we liked in our childhood and independent creators that are still making them. So I think you got an excellent system to live that up.
I agree, but... but like that's us and it's small potatoes, but like the hardcore AAA franchise, you know, that's getting most of the money in the gaming industry and that's the way the gaming industry is trying to form itself to fit this kind of between 15 and 30 year old, you know.
Well, those are the ones with the money.
But they have such bad taste.
Oh dear. So controversial statement of the episode. I had this thought, like how popular the Wii was with, you know, nursing homes and stuff back in 2006. And I thought the better of making some really crass statement about Nintendo having to reconsider their target demographic if they want the Wii U to be successful 7 years later.
Ouch. Ouch. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think Nintendo just has this perception problem. That, like, Nintendo does a great job of bringing the younger and casual gamers in, but when they graduate up to being not casual gamers anymore, which is what happens if they enjoy gaming.
Right.
Nintendo is seen as the training wheels.
Right.
And that's unfair because a lot of the games on Nintendo, whether they look kiddie or not, are pretty intensely difficult games, you know?
Yeah, Wonderful 101 is probably a good example. It might not look like a quote-unquote hardcore game, but it's, you know, all the reviews say that the difficulty really ramps up and there's not enough training wheels for these.
Yep, but so many of these games that look like all hardcore, like Bulletstorm. I've never played Bulletstorm. I shouldn't use that as an example. But, you know, like, all of these, like, really, like, cinematic games, so many of them are just, like, quick time events strung together.
Right.
Gaming? Well, I don't know. I'm sure a bunch of Dragon's Lair fans are going to write, now, that is the best type of gaming.
Oh, dear.
But, you know, I don't know, but you're absolutely right, because the type of gaming that I like, I'm really not alone. There's still people who like point-and-click adventures. There's still people who like platformers. There's still people who like shooters. There's still people who like more traditional RPGs, and they're making them.
Yeah, yeah, and if it weren't for a place like Kickstarter, they wouldn't be getting made because the publishers are like, you know, those genres are over. And yet, I think they're being proven wrong left and right here. So I don't know if the answer is that the publishers take notice again, or if you know, Kickstarter becomes a viable way of making these games, and they reach their audience right away.
And it still will be seen. Kickstarter right now has an amazing opportunity, but they could blow it. If too many of these projects fail, people will lose faith in Kickstarter.
Right.
If a number of projects do come out and they're fantastic, though, it's a great means of getting a game because it's Darwinism right there. If no one's really interested in what you're doing, it wouldn't have sold anyway, even if you got funding.
Right.
But all you know that there's an audience for your game. It's cool. Unfortunately, too many people treat Kickstarter like a store.
Right. Yeah, the thing you're paying for might not get made, and you can't expect to pay what you might, you know. You might be able to like get a digital copy of a game for like $10-15 if you're lucky, but you know the goal is that you want to support the thing that's getting made and that you're not necessarily going to get the same value proposition for it. Like you're paying for this thing to get created, and you're going to be paying more than if you waited. But if you wait, it might not get made because you didn't support it when it needed the help.
Kickstarter is not a store. Kickstarter is the church. Now you're waiting for me to explain that one.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean.
Okay. You go to Kickstarter because you have faith in a project.
Oh, yes.
Money. You're giving money. You're making donations, not payments.
Right.
You're making donations with the hope that it's all going to work out right in the end.
Right.
It's like you go to a church and you put money in the collection plate and you say your prayers and you try to lead a good life and hopefully there's going to be some payout at the end, but you're not really going to know until it happens.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, sorry. There's my statement of this podcast. Let me just update you quickly before we go. I started playing Mass Effect 3.
Oh, man. Okay.
I got mercilessly confused during the opening comic.
Okay.
Very, very obvious that they are cramming two games into about 20 minutes of comic.
Yes.
I make these decisions, and I'm just like, oh, that's cool. Do I want the dude to live, or do I want this girl to live? Okay, I want the girl to live. That's cool. Oh, did I have a relationship with her? Yeah, sure. And then the choices are pretty straightforward there. And I'm like, oh, who do I want to make commander? This guy. He's a friend of mine. I can trust him. And he didn't want to be the commander. Yeah, that's great. That'll be a good guy. That crusty old guy looks dangerous, you know?
Right.
Do you save your crew or do you save the Galactic Federation? I'm like, uh-oh. Now do I kill my friends or thousands of people?
Right.
You know, yeah. But I'm just kind of like, this is going to bite me in the butt later.
Right.
I'm just sitting, but like, I'm playing it and I'm like, and the story doesn't make enough sense to me.
Okay.
Like, what Reaper is kind of explained later after they've already been talking about them for a while.
Yeah, there was a huge build. I mean, the whole first game is about like what they are exactly.
Like, I still don't quite get it. And they keep mentioning these names, and there's a lot of people they'll mention one time.
Oh. And
they mention this one guy once, this guy, and he's like, do you kill him now, or do you convince him? And I'm like, convince? They're like, he was convinced. And I'm like, that was easy. It was really easy to convince. Now I'm sure in the game it was a much more drawn out.
Right. There's whole like reputation system, and then depending on how much like of your skill points you put into your reputation, you're able to like have more persuasive powers. And if you don't, you know, if you like gear yourself more towards combat, you aren't able to have these more interesting outcomes. So the fact that you can like in the comic kind of skip over those considerations is kind of doing a disservice to the experience of the game, I think, on one hand. But on the other one, it's, yeah. I kind of feel your pain. If I may try and explain at least the decision about, like, killing your friends there. Like the guy or the girl.
that was like a huge moment for me playing that first game, because you didn't know it was coming. Like, you got trapped into this thing where it's like, oh, you know, no, the girl, Ashley, her name is, for those who are listening at home, is in trouble. So, you know, depending on, like, if you assign her to this nuke or to fighting on the front to give you and your team enough time to do their mission, you can, like, go towards her. And then it's like, oh, now we have trouble back at the nuke site. And then you can decide to go back. And then it's like, you think you can save both for a while. And then you realize, you know, no, the game's going to make you make a choice.
Yeah.
You can only save one of them. And that was such a hard moment.
Well, what's crazy is, like, I'm playing this episode 3 and I went through it and I knew what was coming, you know, because, you know, I was deciding decisions. And then she's like there in the third game at the beginning.
Right.
She's talking to me and I'm like, if I would choose differently, would it be the guy?
It would be, yes.
And if I chose a different captain, it would have been the old guy?
Anderson is always the guy that you talk to in the military, because the old guy was a politician. Regardless of what you choose, he is going... If you make him the counselor, he is going to resign by the third game. If you never make him the counselor, he'll always be in the military. It makes no difference by that point in the series, unfortunately.
But anyway, I'm playing this game and I'm doing it, and then she's talking to me, and I have two choices, and neither of them seems to indicate exactly what it's going to be. Like, it's nice to see you or something else. And I'm like, which one should I choose? Because I've been following this path. I'd kind of like her to be my girlfriend.
Which is possible.
Seem to be the leading any particular, so like some of it seems random what I'm selecting.
Sure.
I didn't know I'd have to, it would be so deep. Like, they were like, you can create your character to look like anything you want. And yep. I'm like, default. But then they're like, does he have this tragic past where his parents were killed, or did he come military, or was he the last survivor of a giant battle? And I'm like, this is going to affect stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in some ways, it's more hard to do with how events played out in the first game, because it made certain missions available and other ones unavailable. But it also plays into the last game as well.
What hurts is I'm one of those completionist people. Like, I'm playing Earthbound right now, yeah. And after each decision, I go back to every town and talk person to make sure none of their dialogues changed.
Nice. Well, you know how many times I played through the first Mass Effect, do you?
No. How long does the game take, like Mass Effect 3? Like, how long is the campaign?
If you do everything, it might take over 40 hours.
Ugh,
I might have put 50 into it.
And you've played it multiple times?
Three? No, I'm on my second playthrough. Actually, I'm on my second and third playthrough simultaneously, because I have the Wii U version, as you do, and one of my female Shepard character is I'm going through with her on the Xbox 360. But I played through the first game 4 or 5 times now.
With the comic, though, actually does make it a lot easier to try different paths.
Yeah. And for those who are Dragon Age fans, they're creating something called the Keep, which is sort of a way to do this. If you haven't played Dragon Age 1 and 2, you can set all these settings in a non-comic fashion to get down to some really minute detail, apparently, about how to start your new game. So I kind of wish Mass Effect had that, but this is a learning experience for them, I suppose.
Still don't think I understand enough of what happened in the first two games. I really don't know.
Sure.
Should I watch the comic a couple more times and figure it out that way, or is there a better way to go about this? I mean,
you might know someone who made a few Mass Effect videos for Powett's TV. That might not be enough, though. Yeah, you might want to check out YouTube.
I think I just need to know these characters and the enemies and stuff like that, because they keep being referenced, but I'm not familiar enough with what's going on. You know, they keep referring to all these events that Shepard's been through, and the comic tells me a little about it,
right.
But enough.
Interesting. I've been very curious, like, what someone coming in totally fresh would think about that.
The game looks fantastic.
Yeah.
And they're definitely doing some cool stuff. It's weird, though. The faces are such high.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then the the clones are just like, I don't know, this anti-aliased N64-esque.
Oh dear.
My wife was watching it and watching me create my character, and I'm like, look, I can change all the facial features. And my wife's like, that's creepy. I don't want to look at this.
Oh dear.
Because it is kind of. It is really kind of uncanny valley part of it, you know?
Yeah.
But I'll have to keep you updated on that. And I'll try it a couple more times. But I was just, after 20 minutes of that, I'm just like, I have no idea what's going on. Because I heard so many terms, so many characters, so many things. And I need like a little chart or something related to what. Because the comic was definitely trying. And I think for people who played the original games, it would be a great refresh. But for someone coming in cold, it was like, what?
Okay. Should I at least tell you what the Reapers are?
Well, they're like to what, wipe out race and start fresh or something like that?
Yeah, that's the gist of it. So they spent the first two games trying to keep them from even activating, more or less.
It's like the Inquisitor in Red Dwarf.
Kind of, except for that you can't ever, you know, like Lister got off because he had low standards for himself, right? Like the Reapers have no such. Yeah, okay. They're just there to kill you.
Okay.
Right. So like, you know, if you play the first two games, the fact that they're there and you're fighting them, like it's hopeless. Like there's no chance, because this has happened before to intelligent civilizations. They have never ever won. So the fact that you've kept them, you can't keep them from showing up means, like, you know, why are you playing this game? Like, how's this going to turn out? And
like, one of the first things I ever say is like, I have to tell the console that either we should all stand together and give like a Custer's last stand, or pretty much we should, you know, just try ourselves alive.
Right.
Whatever, because humanity in general is not going to make it, but maybe a couple people can. And I'm like, wow, lifting cages so far.
Yeah. Well, it gets better.
I don't know, but that's my update on that. Well, cool. Anyway, we've gone quite a while. I'll keep you updated on that.
Sure.
And so far, still absolutely loving the Wii U, but I gotta say, I've mostly been playing Earthbound on it.
That's okay.
It's okay, but I feel kind of bad that, like, bought this super, you know, new hardware, kind of expensive, and I'm the majority of my gaming time goes towards that. But, like,
it's still cheaper than a cartridge, and you can play it in bed.
I love Earthbound so much, and I never beat it. I never beat it before. Like, I've started it multiple times, but I've never beat it. But right now, I'm just nearing the part where it's far than I've ever been in the game before. So,
well,
I'm
me too, but that's because I never made it that far in the first place.
Yeah. Oh, you picked it up?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, the day it came out.
It's so clever. It's so fun.
I know. I'm really enjoying it. I don't know why. I didn't really get into it the first time I played it.
What? It's hard.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's no hand-holding in that game. You're like, full life, and you have a battle, and you didn't come in prepared enough. You're dead. And it's refreshing. I've died in this game, like, 20 times so far already. And the last time I've died in an RPG was back in the NES days, you know what I mean? And, I mean, this is NES era, but, like, games hold your hand so much. It's, like, almost impossible to die in a modern game.
Right. Well, I think that's why I like supporting those Kickstarters so much. I'm hoping to get more of that experience in a modern game.
Well, anyway, if you have, let's see, what should the question we pose to people be?
Sure.
Have you seen what response we got to people, whether they bought or didn't buy a Wii U? Because we just put that podcast up a few hours ago, so.
Yeah.
So I can't really do a follow-up to that one. I guess, how do you feel about how games are these days? Is this the new golden age of gaming, or are we on the decline, you know? I saw a post recently where someone was contending that the PlayStation, Xbox 360, Wii era was the golden age of gaming. And I don't think so. I think that the era just before that, with the PlayStation 2, would be closer to. For me, the age of gaming is Super Nintendo.
Well, right. I think it has a lot to do with your age.
I think so, too. The age that you play your most games in, although... Yeah, but for so many people, the N64 was like the golden age of gaming. Like N64, PlayStation, Saturn. But for me, that was...
That wasn't great for me, personally. I like N64 games, but I haven't picked up any remakes.
So, I guess that's my question. Please, when you post, say what you think the golden age of gaming is. Mm-hmm. And please post your age.
That'll help.
Your age, if you don't feel comfortable giving out the exact age. But, you know, because I wonder if it really is just based on when you started gaming. But, I don't know. That's something I'd be interested to find out.
Yep. So if you just wanted to leave us a note on our website, famicomdojo.tv/podcast, or if you want to talk about it to us on Twitter, Famicom Dojo, Facebook, Famicom Dojo, call us at 608-492-1923 and leave a voicemail to about 3 minutes or so. That would also be great. And if you're interested in our Kickstarter, we're going to have one at information up at famicomdojo.tv/Kickstarter, where we'll have basic little primer for what we're going to do and an ability to sign up with your email address so that we can notify you when it finally goes up.
Awesome.
Cool beans. All right. Well, I guess until next time.
The dojo is available as a stretch.
Sounds good.
Bye.
Bye.
Famicom Dojo.